Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music.
Whenever skies look gray to me and troubles begin to brew, whenever the winter winds become too strong, I concentrate on you. When fortune cries nay, nay to me, and people declare you're through, whenever the blues become my only song, I concentrate.
Music of Cole Porter. Certainly recognized by many of you, I Concentrate on You, sung by four-time Grammy Award winner Diane Reeves, who's our guest today. Ms. Reeves' career has taken her to the concert stage as well as recording studios and small clubs. She will be featured guest with the Reading Symphony Orchestra at the Sovereign Performing Arts Center as part of the 23rd annual Boskov's Berks Jazz Festival on Friday, the 5th of April. Diane Reeves?
Yes, it
Hi,
is.
Hi, it's Jill Pasternak.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm just wonderful, thank you. After listening to your recordings, I'm even better.
Oh, thank you.
What a joy to speak with you. I know you're going to be appearing at the Sovereign Performing Arts Center as part of that Boskov's Jazz Fest.
Yes.
I had read some information about you that you're going to, of course, be singing with the Reading Symphony, but your singing with the symphonies is not a new thing, is it?
Oh, no, 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 no. It's something I love, but I've done it for quite some time now.
Well, I'm talking about the real ones, like the Berlin Philharmonic, perhaps.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about that. How did that come about, and what was it?
Well, I had done several projects with Simon Ratto. And he, you know, of course, is the conductor of the Berlin Phil.
Yeah.
And he asked me, would I do a New Year's Eve performance with him? And I said, oh, God, yeah, I would love it. So,
how did that come about? Was this, I know you were part of an Ellington Centennial, you know, tribute, but was this something else?
Yeah, yeah. We had all new things written from the Americans. It was all Gershwin. And after I did the Ellington piece with him, and then prior to that, I'd done some other work with him. We just always kept in touch. And he told me about what they do every New Year's and asked me would I like to be a part of it. And I said, yeah.
Oh, well, I did a double take, of course, when I saw you had done other things as well, didn't you? Also worked with the Berlin, and then you had the L.A. Philharmonic too, isn't that
yes,
right?
Yes, I've worked all over the world with amazing orchestras.
But it's amazing because you are a jazz singer, and I have to tell you, a fabulous one. I mean, you have a stellar reputation, but I have listened to several of your albums, and I must say, I am a vintage age, and I know so many of those tunes that you actually took. There's so much good music around, isn't there?
Yes, there is. Past and present.
Yeah, I think the Sarah Vaughan tribute was really knocked my socks off. And all those marvelous, marvelous songs. You've had some marvelous musicians playing with you as well. What are you going to be doing, actually, that is different this time with the Reading Symphony?
I have some new pieces that are being written for me. And some of the repertoire from the Sarah Vaughan CD. We have a lot of really, really cool stuff.
Whenever and wonder if there could be a soul.
We just heard Ray Noble's I Hadn't Anyone Till You, sung by Diane Reeves on her tribute to Sarah Vaughan, The Calling. Artists performing with her, Mulgrew Miller on piano, Greg Hutchinson drums, Reginald Veal bass, Clark Terry trumpet, and the entire group conducted by Billy Childs. Well, and the marvelous, not only arrangements, but of course, improvisations. You have the great, great musicians, but you are very much a part of them. You know, you did that Love for Sale. I think that's one of the greatest things I ever heard. But I think
you.
That was a live performance, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, It was spectacular. I have to tell you, your improvisation and just your singing, and you really made that song what it is, you know? I mean, the whole, it's very dramatic, you know, when you really go into it and you think about what it's all about, but terrific.
And it's also open to interpretation. People ask me a lot, why do you sing that song? I say, well, the love that I'm talking about that is for sale is my artistry.
But I don't think
so. That's how I relate to the song.
Well, it's they're revealing themselves a little bit. Music again of Cole Porter, Love for Sale, performed by Diane Reeves, our guest today, with some amazing musicians. Otmaro Ruiz on synthesizer, Reginald Veal on bass, Rocky Bryant drums, and Romero Lubombo guitar. Tell us a little bit about your background. Now, you come from a musical family, don't you?
Yes, I do. I have an uncle who was with the Colorado Symphony for over 40 years. Prior to that, with San Francisco, he's a bassist.
Yes.
And his name is Charles Borelli.
Charles Borelli, he's known very well.
Yes.
Known.
And my, he really, really was the beginning of everything. And then I have my grandmother's sisters and brothers were amazing musicians and storytellers. So, you know, I had these great aunts and uncles who, you know, when we have the family gatherings,
everyone sings. But your mother played the trumpet, is that right?
You know, my mom, I told somebody one time, it stuck. I keep trying to tell people, she played trumpet in high school, you know, but she has become a trumpet player, and my mother was a nurse.
Oh, well, I think they're always looking for things, but you certainly have some, Nicholas Payton on some of your albums just absolutely knocks your socks off.
Yeah.
And I was so interested in, a song like Skylark, that is so old. I mean, that's from my youth.
I love that song.
It's gorgeous, but I was just wondering, did you do research on these? Did you just kind of say, oh, yeah, I like that
one?
Well,
I mean, I had heard them, you know, growing up, because... If it wasn't live music, it was really great recorded music. But I always loved the lyric of the song.
Oh, and all, on all of them, actually.
Yeah.
A lot of the Cole Porter things. And I Concentrate on You and You Go to My Head. And I mean, these are real, these are oldies.
Skylark. won't you tell me where my love can be? Is there a meadow in the midst where someone's waiting to be kissed? Oh, Skylark.
That should stir some memories. Skylark, music of Johnny Mercer with lyrics by Hoagie Carmichael. We heard Diane Reeves performing with Peter Martin piano, Reuben Rogers bass, and Gregory Hutchinson on drums. What do you think of the new trends in jazz? Are there any?
Oh, there are. It's right now, you know, we'll be able to speak volumes in retrospect. I think it's currently evolving. There are a lot of really wonderful vocalists that are kind of beyond the periphery that are coming up, and the music is changing because women are more forthcoming with what they do. They're writing, they're performing, they're singing, they're playing, everything. They're doing everything and kind of changing the course in a lot of ways.
In other words, you're not the front of the all-male orchestra, right?
No,
that's the old days.
Yeah, that's old days.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, it's not a novelty to see an all-female band.
No, not at all. Yeah. Great jazz musicians as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, of course, you know, the times, they are changing, or they have been, certainly.
Yes.
And, but I was so fascinated that you are drawing such tremendous audiences to a symphonic concert, really. And I guess it's wonderful. You're really, well, you're not really crossing over. Have you ever done any classical things?
Early in my career, yeah. But, more than anything, just the jazz and all kinds of music from around the world.
Well, again, your roots are obviously there, and you've worked with some of the very best, and you've won all kinds of awards, and I guess we could talk for the next 20 minutes listing them all. One thing was really rather interesting was that creative chair for jazz for the L.A. Philharmonic.
Yes.
What was that all about?
Oh, it was an extraordinary experience. I started it off. Christian McBride followed me, and then Herbie is there currently. And what the L.A. Phil decided is they wanted to give artists an opportunity to, you know, to run their music, you know. And so there's someone who's in world music, and it was myself when we first started, when the hall was first built. And it was really great because I have a lot of really good friends in the industry, jazz musicians, and people think that they're only one thing because they hear their records, but they don't know, you know, the richness and the vast backgrounds that a lot of these people have. So I was able to showcase a lot of that, and we did commissioned works with the symphony, as well as I booked the big old Hollywood Bowl. So
it was extraordinary.
My favorite concert was Oscar Peterson and Clark Terry. That was my favorite.
That was no gamble at all.
Yeah, that was extraordinary.
Oh, it must have been. And it's a huge place, the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh,
I mean,
God,
it's just incredible. You also did something I read. I really was not aware of this, that there was something that George Clooney did, Good Night and Good Luck, that was about, it was Edward Murrow's interview with Joseph McCarthy, who unfortunately is very timely even now.
Yes,
but how did that work? I mean, did you did the soundtrack? Was that?
Well, you know, it was interesting because I thought it was just, you know, the soundtrack, which is a big deal. But no, George Clooney actually approached me in being in the film, and my part in the film was kind of like a Greek chorus, you know.
I see.
And he selected all of the music, which was perfect.
Wow.
And from that time, and I got to channel all my favorite artists and, you know, sing with respect of the time. And the other thing that I loved was, you know, I thought I was going to record the music first, and he said, no, I want you to deliver your lines just like the actors. So I sang live in the film.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Is that going to be repeated anywhere? Do you know?
Well, you know, it comes on HBO all the time.
Well, I'll have to
it's
keep
out
my,
there. Yeah,
it's called Good Night and Good Luck. And, of course, I remember Edward Murrow, and I remember that horrible confrontation. And it's so very timely. And leave it to George Clooney. He's very creative and has got a lot of guts as well. Did you study formally anywhere, Diane?
Yes. I went to the University of Colorado. Mm-hmm. I studied voice and composition.
And composition. Have you composed anything?
I write a lot of my songs.
I know you improvise.
And I think the reason that I study composition is because at the time, there weren't really any jazz programs. So I had the great fortune of having an extraordinary teacher who understood that she taught me all about my voice and gave me the training that I needed, but knew that I was not going to pick classical music to move forward in. So she was the one, Helen Bowman, she was the one that said, study composition, and I did, and I'm really, really thankful to her for that.
I think that there's a time in your life when you realize that whatever it is that is eating you, whatever it is that you're running from, whatever it is that you're afraid of, you just have to stop, take a deep breath, turn around, and face it. Face it. Stick your arms out as wide as you can and embrace it. Hold on.
A dramatic affirmation of Diane Reeves' beliefs, the song Testify, written by her and Munyongo Jackson, and we heard her singing with Munyongo Jackson on percussion, Otmar Ruiz piano, Reginald Veal bass, Rocky Bryant drums, and Romero Lubombo guitar. Again, I'm going to go back to that Love for Sale. You really do a lot of things there. I mean, you're not just singing, you're an instrument as well, and fascinating, and the tempos. I was terribly, terribly impressed with that, as all of your beautiful albums. And is there anything new coming up in terms of...
Well, I'm working on a new record that is not in the jazz vein. It is... it's got jazz sensibilities, but I'm kind of reaching back and working with a lot of young musicians on this one, because I love a lot of the music that is coming up, and it just kind of just happened this way. I started out, and all of them wanted to be a part of my record, and it's funny because I'm working with musicians whose fathers and mothers I work with, you know, and I'm loving it because their ideas are so fresh and exciting and new. And
are they based on any of the old?
Some of them, you know, there's a lot of really new repertoire in there. Even Esperanza Spalding wrote a beautiful piece for me in her way, you know.
Yes.
And I love it.
She's
a great poet.
She's
too.
A great, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm working with Robert Glasper on this one. There's a young gentleman who I've just fallen in love with. His name is Raul Midan. He is on it. I have a piece that I recorded with Gregory Porter, the great Gregory Porter. Mm-hmm. And so it's just all of these. And then, you know, I'm working with John Clayton's son, Gerald Clayton, on piano.
You wait around long enough, they grow up.
I know. And I remember him when he was an itty-bitty thing. And now he's just doing it, you know. So it's exciting.
Well, you're doing it, too, because you're updating yourself as well. Is there anything new, though? I mean, where is jazz as we know it going? Do you have any idea?
Well, right now, it's just in that percolating stage, you know. It's there are some really extraordinary new voices that are coming out. But, you know, it's we'll be able to really say what it is in the future, you know, in retrospect, because right now, I mean, I see so many things, but and I see how the young people are you know, involved with classical music, the music that they hear, mm-hmm. Free forms,
yes,
just all of this magic, even hip hop and just rock. Everything is in there, and it's done, and it's well thought out, and it's done in a way that is just really turning into something beautiful. So, you know, I'm just watching and listening.
Is it comfortable for you?
Yeah,
the new sounds.
Yeah, it's comfortable because I remember this period in my life. I was young at that time, but they call this period in my life fusion.
Uh-huh, sure.
So, you know, it was that time when it was people were stretching out because, I mean, these kids have access to everything all over the world. So, of course, these kinds of experiences, social network, all of this kind of stuff is going to influence the sound of the music.
But you're also talking about style, but I mean, musically, are the harmonies different? Are they more dissonant?
Really, and the way that they move, very, very different. The way that they feel time is so different. And that's one of the reasons why I'm enjoying working with them, because given me an opportunity to, you know, to listen
and grow, probably.
And to yes, really grow.
And be current, which is really amazing, because that's always, because it moves very fast in art.
Yes, it does.
You know?
Yeah. And it's rich right now. It is just rich.
And wide open, huh?
Mm-hmm. I would say the undercurrent, the subculture or whatever is very rich. And it's bubbling up. But yeah, you know, so I'm loving it. I love being a part of it. And they're all into experimentation, which I love.
Well, what I was going to say was it's not as straightforward. It's more complex is what I want to say. Is it harmonically?
For us,
is it more complex?
I think if we relate to the music the way that we know the music, it is. But if you kind of, I laugh, I say, you know, I'm going to act like a child with this, learning a new language, like I don't know, you know, the language, and just feel it and move with you. And it's different. It's really different.
Is it comfortable?
Yeah.
You like it?
I really love it.
And it's, of course, new, and it's current, but it's not new, if you know what I mean. It's on top. You're on top of things, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
So any exciting new projects that nobody knows about?
Wow. You mean of other musicians?
No, just with you or appearances or recordings.
Well, right now, like I said, I'm in the studio working on my next record, which I'm excited about. But what has happened is it's opened up this other thing for me. And that is while I don't go in, I mean, I do master classes and I really love being able to tour, so I haven't settled down to go somewhere and teach. But I've realized that my stage is a place too. So I've come up, I have this idea of, you know, using all of these young people that I know nobody else sees and bring them to the forefront. And recently I did a concert at Carnegie Hall, which was, it was great. It was sold out. Esperanza did it with
me. Yeah, she's amazing.
Layla Hathaway. And there was this young girl that I met who went to Berkeley, who is just, she's just beautiful in the way that she writes and hears. But nobody knows her. So I introduced her, and I thought, you know, I can do this all the time. I love this, so that's what I will continue to do. As I go along and find these young musicians that I really like, I'll just have them out on the road with me.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting because years ago there was no Berkeley, and jazz musicians had to find their way.
They were the school.
They had to find their way on the road.
Yeah.
I mean, they really didn't go somewhere and learn chord progressions.
No,
They did it, and they heard it, and they had ideas of their own.
And then they went and worked with Art Blakey.
Yes, right.
And they got with Ellington or Basie.
But it was always working with the masters.
Yes,
you never went
to
school to learn anything, and now there is this wonderful opportunity, and I think that may also have contributed. contributed. The whole idea of starting that was so brilliant as well, because it's music, I mean.
Yeah, but the one thing that you get in school, that is in school, that you... let me back this up. The one thing that you get working with musicians that is not in school is the soul part.
You get the real
communication
story too.
Yeah, and that part bothers me because, you know, I feel that in the music. But, you know, the only way to make that change is to invite them to be on your stage.
Well, I think a lot of it, too, is in anything, any of the arts, is education. I mean, you learn, and then you kind of lose a sense of freedom of expression because you're kind of thinking of what's the correct way to do this, whereas
right.
before it was kind of intuitive. You know, I mean, and that's no good either, because then you don't quite know what you're doing.
Well, you know, I wouldn't, you know, all the architects, the thing was their tools were so, you know, together that the music, you know, ceased to be cerebral, I guess. It was,
right.
you know, it was like from right, you know, they knew what they were doing. So it could be from, you know, from the creator straight to the instrument. And that's what I love.
Yeah.
And I also love the intimate conversation that you hear when you listen to all of those bands, you know,
right,
those
right.
older bands, you know,
yeah.
you know, they're talking to each other. And that's one thing I don't really get when I listen to a lot of the younger bands, but it's starting to change.
Well, they talk to each other in the music too, when they're
that's
performing.
That's what I'm talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, you hear it. It's very much like
there's
I
jokes,
would say,
there's,
improvisational, even in classical.
It's a conversation.
Yeah, it's and the improvisation, like even in Indian music, if you ever watch the sitar players and the timbalas, it's amazing. They kind of look at each other and they know where they're going because it's a conversation. Jazz has always been that way.
Yeah, there's a form, and then after that, you know, to me, the master of showing people that I love, and I love it because when he performs in front of the audience, they get it too. He's able to communicate that. Is Ahmad Jamal.
Oh,
he
well.
Can communicate all the complexities, and people breathe and move right with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, of course, that's the inexplicable part of it.
Yeah.
I think. But you certainly are. It's very, very easy to explain why you're successful. And I am so thrilled and honored to be able to speak with you today, Diana.
Oh, well, thank you.
Miss Reeves,
so
I mean,
much.
You are a big shot, and we love you. And we look forward to your appearing with the Reading Symphony.
Well,
and,
thank you. Well, are you going to be at the concert?
I'll try. It's
okay.
A ways up for me, but I'll certainly make an opportunity to,
all right.
If I can get
well,
one
please
up there.
Come, if you do, please come back soon.
I would love to. Thanks
right.
once again. Thanks for giving us your time, too.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We've been speaking with the megastar, Diane Reeves, who will be appearing on Friday, April 5th at 7:30 p.m. at the Sovereign Performing Arts Center with the Reading Symphony Orchestra. I'm Jill Pasternak. Until next time.
For a second listen to selected Crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Hattie, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group Incorporated. Thanks for listening. Just watching the show.